Coming up, Twitter Music is live for some very special people. Plus, Pulse is officially LinkedIn. Google is setting Frommers free. And watch out for encoded Facebook messages. All that and more up next on The Social Hour.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 106, recorded April 12th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. Check out their new commerce solution so you can start selling stuff immediately. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code SOCIALHOUR4. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour. And happy Friday to everybody who's watching us live from Twit World headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm better than you weather-wise. I already know that to be true, Amber, because we talk about the weather so much at the top of each Social Hour that I now have people who tweet at me and say things like, uh-oh, Amber's not going to have anything good to say about the weather this week in Toronto when you ask her.
It's just not pretty, Sarah. I'm not going to lie. The past couple of days, we've had freezing rain, and it's been very cold, unseasonably cold for this time of year, and just waiting for the sun to come out. It's not happening. So, unfortunately, it's like a really long winter that doesn't seem to want to go away. So I'm not complaining about it. You know, it could be worse. However, it is definitely not one of the best springs we've ever had.
Well, it's going to change. I know it will. It has to, right?
It will. And Sarah, I noticed that you have sandals on today.
I do.
I know that sounds creepy, but yeah. I did see a full shot before the show. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm jealous. Is it warm there?
Yeah. It's these are my saltwater sandals. Thank you for noticing. They usually go away during the winter and then they come back out when it starts to get sunny again. And yeah, it's been really nice the last few days in the Bay Area. I was staying up at my mom's house in Sonoma County last night, but I haven't been back to San Francisco yet, but I do follow Carl the Fog, which is a Twitter account dedicated to the fog, which is now associated with a personality. His name is Carl. If anyone isn't following Carl, it's Carl with a K. And Carl is already talking about how he's eating San Francisco again after a brief time away. So that usually means by the time I'm driving across the Golden Gate Bridge, we will be encased in fog again, and it won't be saltwater sandals weather, Amber. If it makes you feel any better, we're coming back to Earth as well.
I don't know if it makes me feel better, but I feel now as though I need to start a Twitter account, something like Sam the Snowman or something like that, just to talk about the snow in Toronto.
Yeah,
that would be good.
It's good. It's actually, Carl the Fog is very popular. He has many thousands of followers on Instagram.
Wow.
People have really taken to him because in general, fog is one of those things that people complain about because it keeps the sun away, especially in the winter or in the warmer summer months. So now that we have kind of a personality or persona, people embrace Carl a little bit more.
Love it. I don't know. That sounds like fun.
That's the beauty of Twitter, right?
It is the beauty of Twitter. And our first story is about Twitter and Twitter's new music app, which I think the first time I read about this, it was actually Ryan Seacrest. There was an article about him having tweeted about this. It seems like he's getting the first run on a lot of new technologies out there. And there are rumors in terms of when the app is going to launch. But basically, as far as I can tell from this particular article and All Things D, is that a select group of people who are famous have access to the app already.
Yeah, it's interesting. So yeah, we heard yesterday Seacrest had tweeted, the new Twitter music app is awesome, and yeah, it's real, and everybody over at American Idol are having a great time. And All Things D had reported this is going to happen on Friday. They're going to launch on Friday. And then it kind of turned into, well, it might be over the weekend because Coachella is a big music festival that officially starts tomorrow. So maybe it would be in some sort of conjunction with, you know, a big music push. And it sounds like there are a variety of celebrities. So who knows how many followers you have in order to be considered a celebrity. But Ryan Seacrest has millions of them who have access to Twitter Music already. The idea, I guess, and, you know, I haven't seen it in working action yet, but the idea is that it would be a standalone app, apparently out for iOS to begin with, sort of the way Vine works, just for iOS users at the beginning. That's another property that Twitter acquired, which is the short video service. And with music, it would be something like if I'm following Amber and Amber listens to a song or likes a song or whatever data that Twitter can grab from maybe your activity, that would be suggested to me, a very social way of discovering music and listening to music. What's interesting is that, at least from what I hear, it sounds like Twitter has some agreements so that if you like a song and I want to hear that song, I would hear maybe a 30-second snippet of the song via iTunes or SoundCloud, but not necessarily the entire song. And that's where I think services like this sometimes fall short for me, because an excerpt of a song sometimes is like, oh yeah, I know that song, but if I've never heard it before, it's really not enough. So I wonder how Twitter would make this maybe a more useful option going forward. Amber, do you think that Twitter is the right place to launch yet another music discovery tool?
I think it's interesting. I mean, I don't see it being hugely successful, but it just seems like a fun add-on. Obviously, they have the data anyway, as far as what people are listening to. So just a way to be able to scrape all of that data and figure out what type of music recommendations may make sense for you. So I don't think it's one of those things that people are going to necessarily be blown away with, because there are so many different music apps out there that don't do things exactly the same way, but do things in a similar way as far as getting recommendations from your friends. So I think it'll take a while before Twitter Music gets to the point where it's able to compete with some of those other services.
Yeah, I agree. I agree as well. And it'll be interesting to see if, you know, having Ryan Seacrest as kind of the social mouthpiece is a good thing. Seacrest had he had tweeted out about how Draw Something 2, which is sort of Zynga's next gen version of Draw Something, which was an app that was really, really popular for a very short time. I don't know. I don't know how that did for Zynga. It probably got some interest, but it's weird to the way that he tweeted, it kind of made it seem like it was like, oh, Did Ryan Seacrest just give something away? But clearly he's working with Twitter PR about this, because one of the Twitter accounts had retweeted that tweet. So, you know, from Twitter communications. So it's sort of like, yeah, okay, we get what's going on. You're having a few celebrities get the word out, very small number of people, see who gets interested. If you go to music.twitter.com right now, you can technically sign up. It doesn't actually take you anywhere. It's kind of an infinite loop of sign up, but I'm sure Twitter's paying a lot of attention to who's going there and trying to get into the service that they can see who's interested.
I like how All Things D called it a faux stealth marketing campaign, which I think is probably one of the most accurate descriptions. So, it does seem a little staged, which is unfortunate. But nonetheless, obviously, it's getting people's interest and getting people excited about it. Now, Sarah, this is big news. You know, we always talk about LinkedIn on the show, and LinkedIn has just been kind of plowing forward. LinkedIn has just announced that they've acquired Pulse for $90 million in stock and cash based on this TechCrunch article. So they continue their evolution into being a platform where people come to get content and get absorbed in that content. And I was doing a speaking event this week, and it was all about adaptation. And I had asked someone on Twitter which companies are adapting the best in your mind as far as tech companies. And someone mentioned LinkedIn, because if you think about it, they have kind of adapted and pivoted over the years. And there's something very different about their play today as far as the content push.
Yeah, it's Leo and I were talking about Pulse yesterday on iPad Today, because this news came out right in the middle of our show, and Leo was saying, I've never really liked Pulse all that much. It was kind of like there's Pulse and there's Zeit and there's Google Currents, and they all kind of work the same way. But, you know, Pulse has really started to work the same way as some of the other social news discovery apps more recently, because it really didn't start out social. Pulse has, 30 million users in more than 190 countries. So that's a nice user base. Approximately 40% of the users are outside of the U.S., which is also kind of interesting. But just in February, so just a couple of months ago, was when Pulse added the social feature called Pulse Highlights. And what that would do is tell me which one of my Facebook friends have also shared the story that I'm reading on Pulse. There's also a new highlight section that would highlight the stories that my friends have shared. So if Amber's sharing something or reading something, I just have a lot more information about that, which helps me discover stories that I might like. So this makes perfect sense to me, Amber, for LinkedIn. But I wonder if, you know, besides the user base, I wonder if somehow Pulse and LinkedIn have been talking for a while. And Pulse, you know, is it just coincidental that the app got really social right before it got acquired? Or maybe some sort of a, hey, this is what we've agreed to do down the road. Let's start to make this a product that our user base is getting comfortable with before we fold it into LinkedIn. I don't know the answer. I'm just sort of thinking out loud.
Yeah, you know, and I think when you mentioned the numbers as far as how many users that Pulse has, you know, 30 million users, I also thought it was interesting that about 40% of its users are outside the U.S. based on this TechCrunch article. So, you know, a big group of people who aren't necessarily even in the United States using this particular service. So, I don't know. You know, I think it makes sense because I think LinkedIn has been going this way for a while. And I think that they've proven that they really want to be a place where people come to get content, you know, thought leadership articles and everything in between. So a big acquisition. And I mean, for Pulse, the fact that they were just started in 2010 while a couple of guys were at Stanford University. I mean, it's phenomenal in 3 years to think of the price tag attached to this. Sarah, we're in the wrong industry, obviously.
Obviously. I know. Well, you know, there is an industry, at least, you know, we're pretty good at, and that's collaborating together on projects, right? Amber and I make the show every week. We're very, very rarely in the same place. In fact, it really hasn't happened in 106 episodes. It's happened exactly once.
One time.
And we've worked together before then. But another company that's adding some collaboration tools, and this is on the writing side, is Medium. Amber, I have writer's privileges on Medium. It's not exactly open to everyone. And it's always been a somewhat unclear to me why I can write on Medium and not everybody can. I guess it's something that they're experimenting with. Medium, of course, is the brainchild of Ev Williams. This is under the company Obvious Corporation. He is Twitter founder. He and Biz Stone and I believe Jason Goldman, who was with Twitter in the early days, have started Medium. And this is not very new, but it's kind of chugging along slowly as far as what we can talk about, at least in the media about it. But what's interesting about Medium now is they have a new collaboration tool. So let's say that I've got this this great blog post. That's kind of what you would expect to see on Medium in a variety of different subjects. And I really like what I've posted. I'm excited about it. But I kind of want you, Amber, to maybe look over it before I make it public. I now have an opportunity to invite you as a collaborator, and you can, it almost turns into a living, breathing document where you can make little amendments or make little notes that I can see over on the right hand side. It looks really, really nice. So it's sort of like a document that I've invited folks to. You could think of it as something you could do within Microsoft Office or a variety of other products, but it's within this kind of blogging backend. Now, at that point, let's say that you suggest, you know, Sarah, this paragraph was maybe a little bit wordy. Here are my suggestions. Whether I use your suggestions and change things around or not, at the end of the post, because I had asked you for your feedback and you'd given it to me, there's a little, like, thanks to Amber Mack that will then show up at the bottom of the story. So it kind of almost works like a news article. You know, sometimes you'll see there's an author byline, and then down at the end of a New York Times article, they might so-and-so reporter also contributed to the story type of a thing. And it just kind of gives Medium a little bit more of that there was more to this than just one person. And it's not only giving credit to people who helped, but just putting forth the idea that I'm probably stronger having a few people look at my work because collaboration can make really great projects. What do you think?
Oh my gosh, yeah. I think, well, first of all, I think everybody needs an editor no matter what. And I've worked with some really great editors in the past and they always end up making the piece better. So I think this, you know, from a visual perspective, it looks beautiful. I mean, I haven't been using Medium at all and I haven't been following it too closely, but I love this integration. And in fact, you know, in some ways I could see it available in other tools. I know there's one tool that I used a lot when I was writing my book called Scrivener, I believe. And it's basically a great tool to be able to go in and manage something that's really kind of long form writing. So having a feature like this would be amazing. In the blogging world, I think it's cool too. It makes sense. I just, again, you know, on the Medium front, it's not a company that I hear a lot about, but I think they've done a beautiful job creating that tool. But I don't know how long it will stick. Do you have a different opinion of it, Sarah?
Not really. I've gotten into it so that I could publish via Medium if I wanted to. I'm not really writing a whole lot of anything, though, Amber, so it's certainly not because I want to stay away from Medium for any reason. It's the kind of thing I've got to dive into also. Every weekend, on Friday, I'm always really, really optimistic about all the writing I'm going to do over the weekend. I'm also building out my new blog, and we'll get to that later. But yeah, I've got to put some effort into it. But I do agree that it's just good. It's good to have people that you trust looking over your work, and it sounds like Medium has put together a product that makes it really easy for us to do that.
Yeah, definitely.
Of course, if we're using Medium.
Another interesting story. This is kind of a fun one here. Google mines Fromer's travel for social data, then sells the name back. So basically, as far as I can tell from this story, is that Google acquired or purchased the brand Fromer's Travel for $22 million in August 2012, has then sold the name back to Fromer's, but kept all of the social data as far as the followers and subscribers on different social networks. And it's an interesting debate, I think, in terms of, hey, is this the right thing to do? Should you be allowed to do that because the name has changed and maybe, you know, things may go a different direction. But what do you think of this story, Sarah?
It's interesting, right? I mean, Google has been really been buying up companies that have to do with travel. Mm. Bought ITA back in 2010, which is a travel data service, for a lot of money. Bought Zagat in 2011. Then bought Fromer's, and we all went, oh, okay, well, you know, there's more travel to this. Google's really, they're buying up all the properties. But they didn't really want the Fromer's title. In fact, it sounds like all they wanted were things like the Fromer's Twitter accounts, social data, like who are all the followers that Fromer's had on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, and then changing them over to, for example, Fromer's Travel, which was a Twitter account, is now Zagat Travel. And they announced in a tweet, I don't think they're trying to fool anybody, just said like, hey, we're now Zagat Travel, welcome. That's what we are now. You know, they're not so interested in the name Fromer's. I wonder, I guess they can do whatever they want, Amber. You know, if they bought the whole thing and they want to dump the name, well, they already bought the whole thing, so they can do whatever they want with it. And I guess it's good that they gave the name back to the founder, who's, you know, an elderly man. But it does seem a little, I haven't heard of anything like this before.
Right. Yeah, I feel like this is kind of going to happen so much in the future, right? The idea that you're not necessarily buying a brand, but you're buying the people who go along with it. You know, as this article says, you know, obviously this is all of a sudden access to thousands and thousands of travel enthusiasts. So that is a big deal for them. And I think we're going to see this more often. I mean, imagine an individual, like, could you see an individual at some point selling their followers to a brand because maybe someone's a travel blogger? Like, imagine Johnny Jett, who I think, you know, he's done a lot of stuff with Leo over the years. Imagine if he sold out to a big travel publisher and they changed his Twitter name to the name of their publication. I mean, is that an ethical thing to do? I guess it's okay. I don't know.
I mean, there certainly aren't any laws against it. And in fact, we actually have a story we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show, which is there's that kind of shady business of buying Twitter followers.
Yes. That never goes away, does it?
Right. Yeah. And it can, if someone is not vetting you properly, they might not necessarily know that you don't actually have several 100,000 followers. A lot of that is baloney. But yeah, it gets into a little bit of a gray area. You know, if you were a business that wanted to be bought by another business because you supposedly have so much cachet socially, well, not all business. I'm certainly not suggesting that Frommer's is in that category. It's a really sort of an old school respected travel brand.
I just can't stop thinking about this potentially happening more and more, especially, like I said, to individuals. Like it seems to me that if you have all these brands out there who are trying to amass a massive following of people, and we know, like, you know, we know that buying followers is a bad thing. People don't react to that very well. So if they were to go out and just essentially buy a profile that had those people attached to it, I mean, it seems like an easy fix for them, except It may cost them a lot of money. I'm not saying that anyone should buy us, Sarah, but I'm just saying there could be other people who have, you know, millions of followers, and that could be appealing to some big brands. I don't know. We'll see what happens. I think it'll happen more in the future.
Yeah. I can't think of one scenario where this has happened yet, and maybe we're just overlooking something, but I can bet it'll happen sooner than later, and it won't be just once, because, you know, quick buck. Hey, so this is a story, Amber, that came in right before we started the show, that Flipboard, which last week, I guess it was, sometime in the last 2 weeks, Flipboard 2.0 had allowed us to create our own magazine. So, Amber, you could subscribe to the magazine that I'm curating based on the stuff that I'm looking at around Flipboard. And the numbers are really good. At least they sound good on paper. 2 weeks after launching Flipboard 2.0, so it was 2 weeks ago, the company has announced that readers have created over 500,000 curated publications.
Wow.
Now, of course, there's no limit on the publications that I can curate, so it doesn't mean 500,000 people, but still publications. And that over 50% of Flipboard 2.0 users read magazines daily, so you've got a lot of people coming back. And that 3 million new users have signed up for Flipboard in the last 2 weeks. Now, that's the crazy number there. And I guess, Amber, that, I don't know, it has to do with discovery. You know, I create a magazine, and maybe I blast that out on Facebook or in other social circles that might not be using Flipboard, saying, hey, follow me. This is my cool stuff. It's very Pinteresty in a way. To say 3 million users in the last 2 weeks, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's unbelievable to think about some of those stats and some of those numbers, and you know, just how many people are kind of flocking to it. But you know, just the thought that you can so easily do something like this has, I'm sure, a lot of people excited to be able to just collect all these different things. And I think Pinterest is a great example of how people just love to kind of come in and curate their own content. And it looks pretty neat. Obviously, a big success for them. It's funny, they have an infographic out that has the top 10 countries as far as Flipboard readership. So USA, Canada, UK, France, China, Italy, Taiwan, Germany, Spain, and Brazil. So definitely an international hit for Flipboard as far as the users all over the place.
Yeah. Well, congrats to Flipboard. Sounds like they are making the right moves going forward. Yeah, but this is a story that I almost don't even want to talk about because we talked about it on Tech News Today earlier today, and it's almost hard for me to wrap my brain around. But the idea is stenography and being able to hide secret messages in Facebook photos. Now, if you say to me, that sounds crazy, it's actually possible. The idea is that a college student who actually used to be an intern at Google and works in computer science goes to Oxford University, has created an extension. It just works in Chrome, at least for now, that lets anyone share messages hidden inside JPEG images that are uploaded to Facebook. And in order for anybody to be able to decipher these messages, they need to have the password that I have created. And the idea is that the creator, his name is Owen Campbell Moore, said, we want to demonstrate that JPEG stenography can be performed on social media, whereas previously been impossible. He said he spent about 2 months over the last year working on the extension as a research project. He then said, listen, this is not the sort of thing where everyone has to freak out and wonder if you know, all the terrorists are hiding information inside Facebook photos. Just that is something that can be done. And the idea with stenography is that it's sort of like you're hiding a message in a place that no one would think to look for a message. I mean, if it's a JPEG image that just looks like an image, well, we have however many millions of images on Facebook right now, and they all just look like they're supposed to be there, not necessarily looking fishy in the first place. So I don't know, Amber, does it scare you? Does Facebook seem like the place where there could be these private back channel conversations going on that are troublesome or worrisome to us?
I feel like it takes just not too much effort, but a little bit of effort to be able to go in and to create that secret book image. So at the end of the day, I think for most people, they may find an easier way to be able to share a secret that isn't necessarily done in this respect as far as, you know, installing the extension and what other details need to be figured out. So I think it's more of an experiment, a research project, and makes sense, but I'm not sure if it's going to catch on. The only thing I don't understand, Sarah, and I read the article, is that as far as the shared password, so what's the process of getting that password to an individual?
I don't know.
Do you know that piece? I can't figure that piece out.
That's a good question. I was thinking about that earlier, and sorry that I said stenography. A couple of people in chat are like, it's steganography. Sorry, I just misspoke. I don't know. I don't know if it's just, it would be a matter of me saying to you, you know, in an email or something like, hey, you know that thing? Here's the password. I'm not exactly sure, but and that's probably something that, you know, will have to be worked out so that it is as seamless as possible.
But I feel like there's just sorry to interrupt. I feel like there's a bit of a trend lately in terms of secret messages. You know, you have Snapchat and they disappear, and secret messages here, and you can hide secret things here, and it's like I mean. Does anyone actually feel safe doing anything online and believe that it will be a secret forever? I mean, I think it's just a little bit misleading at the end of the day.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing where I think, well, I mean, I just don't have any reason to be hiding messages and photos, but that certainly doesn't mean that I wouldn't someday or that people don't now. The creator of this has said, listen, it's not like as if it's foolproof. He says a researcher could build a system for detecting which images have secret messages hidden in them. Although, in order to do that, you'd have to have access to all the photos on Facebook, right? You have to have access to everything in order to have access to the ones that have hidden messages. And he says, I don't even think the NSA has anything like that. Performing detection on the scale would be very difficult. Yeah. And I can see that. Now, that's the one thing, and I don't want to be alarmist here. And I'm, you know, in general, I'm not all that worried about who's sniffing around on Facebook. Maybe just because my Facebook presence is always public anyway. I have very little private anything on Facebook. Everything is just kind of public. So I have less of an issue with that. But for somebody who does have an issue with it, I wonder if this at any point would make the case for a government organization, et cetera, to just have more access to things on Facebook that aren't necessarily public because they want to make sure that there aren't hidden messages from dangerous people in there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting. It'll be fun to kind of watch it evolve a little bit and see if anyone causes any trouble with it. But I haven't quite figured out all the details as far as the sharing password. Cause it gets to the point, right, Sarah, where you go in, like I said, and you create this and you have the extension and then you have to text someone the password. You know, at the end of the day, for the majority of the population, like clearly there are better ways to share secrets. I think.
I agree. So that's called Secret Book, by the way. Chrome extension, not anything you probably have to worry about just yet. But if it becomes some sort of a widely used, get around piracy laws tool, we'll let you know about it. Quick reminder,
definitely,
by the way, that we record the Social Hour live on Fridays. It is 1:42 p.m. Pacific time, 4:42 Eastern. We started about 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. So do tune in on Friday afternoons if, you know, your boss lets you or you've got a spare hour to hang out with us. You can follow along. We got people in chat. We got people tweeting at us. It's a lot of fun. But don't forget that everything on the Twit Network, the Social Hour included, is on demand. So if you just go to twit.tv/TSH, that's where all of our past episodes live, where all of our show notes live for everything that we talk about, articles and this and that. So that's very helpful. And if you want to get back to us with feedback or maybe ideas for articles that you want us to look at, anything like that, because we love your feedback, do email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv, especially if you've got links and stuff like that. Sometimes it's easier to email us than tweet us. But we'll pretty much take anything. Anything you want to talk about, because it is a collaborative effort. It's a very social show. Okay, Amber, we got some social tips. We got some spotlights. But first, let's take a moment to thank Audible for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. If you are the kind of person who doesn't feel that they read enough, or, I don't know, you kind of need to get into a book and for it taking you like months to get through the Song of Ice and Fire or something like that, right? This is probably sounding familiar. Audible is a great, great place to give it a go, because it's audiobooks. It's not only audiobooks, but it's over 100,000 audiobooks. They're all downloadable titles. And they've got all types of books. You know, you've got classic literature, you've got crazy fiction drama, you've got nonfiction. You've got all the kind of books you could possibly want, and it's all being read to you. And this is stuff that you can access not only on your computer, but a variety of mobile devices. So you can take your audiobook and go with you. If I'm listening to Lean In, Sheryl Sandberg's book about the plight of the woman and empowering ourselves, and I'm sure you've heard about it. And let's say I don't, this is actually a true story. I've got a book club. And we're supposed to be done with Lean In by next Wednesday. We're all going to get together and eat some pizza and drink some wine and talk about it. Well, I just don't know if I've got time to sit down and read the book over the weekend. But I know that the book is 6 hours and 27 minutes when being read to me, because Audible tells me right on the Lean In page, which is pretty cool. And I think to myself, well, you know what? I'm probably going to be driving/walking/ on the elliptical at the gym collectively for about that amount of time. I can listen to this book without actually altering anything that I'm already doing and having to carve out extra time for myself. This kind of just fits into my day. That's the coolest thing. That is the absolute coolest thing. So if you're interested in something like this, Audible is actually offering us free audiobooks. For listeners and viewers of The Social Hour, you can get a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. Hey, have you not listened/read Lean In yet? Maybe that's the book that you'd want, but you can choose any book you like. So download a free audiobook. Here's what you do. And again, you can choose anyone you like. audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. That's the URL to go ahead and try Audible free, 30 days, get that free audiobook, and I guarantee you, you're going to love it. There's something about audiobooks, Amber, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here with you a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's just an easier way to be able to get all that information in. And I totally agree. You know, it's hard for me to sit down and actually find time to read a book, although I have gotten pretty far, but halfway into Lean In so far. And it would be easier if I just listened to it, because the periods of my life I have to sit down and focus on it are just few and far between. So I might have to pick up the rest in an audiobook form.
Yeah. And some people even say it's not so much about the fact that you don't have enough time. It's something about the retention. Some people are great at reading. Other people really like listening. You get more out of it that way. So again, audiblepodcast.com/socialhour and give Audible a try. You will like it. I guarantee it. And if you don't, then I want to hear about it. You can berate me on social media. Speaking of social media, Amber, what is Tint and how can it help businesses?
Yeah, this is our social tip for the week. And I thought this was really cool. I just stumbled across it. I hadn't seen it before, but I know that more and more companies are putting together a social hub on their website. We saw this most recently with the shipping line. I believe we had Jonathan from Maersk on the line about all of their social media success. And they actually have an entire part of their site is a social media hub. So everything they post on Instagram, Facebook, it all shows up there. What's really cool about the service called Tint is it helps to automate that process. So you can create your own social hub on your site simply by using Tint. It starts as a free version, and there are paid versions as well. And then you basically pull in different feeds. It uses hashtags and other ways to get information in. And you can have a really slick looking hub that does have Pinterest-like qualities and is able to bring in all of that content that you create through social channels. So about 10,000 brands are currently using Tint. And you know, it's relatively new, but I can imagine that more and more will take advantage of it just to be able to simply have something that is hub light like on their site.
Yeah. So this is this whole idea, right? It keeps me from having to build some sort of a page that's on a third party site, that's on some sort of a service that's away from my actual domain, where maybe I already have a good amount of readers or people who are coming back regularly and saying, hey, here's my site, but also look at my Pinterest page and maybe also look at my Twitter feed and that sort of thing. I can sort of pick and choose and curate that sort of experience on my own site. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. So you can basically create something that is very personalized towards what you want and manage it so it effectively gets all those messages without knowing very much as far as design and development. And I think that's what a lot of businesses are interested in. You know, there was a time if you wanted to build a social hub like this, it would cost a lot of money, and now they have an out of the box solution that makes it that easy. So I think, you know, this is kind of the way people will go, is more and more brands create their own content channels. You know, I've just been talking a lot about branded content with people, and it's amazing to see some of these brands turn their entire websites into basically content channels where they're just producing content around the industry that they're selling to. And it's not about selling their products, but it's about creating that content to kind of fuel that conversation.
Yeah, very cool. It looks like it works on mobile. I'm looking at tintup.com. That's the page where you can find out a lot more about how it works. And yeah, you've got your Facebook accounts to connect, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, Pinterest. Yeah, obviously it's not the only service that does something like this, but it's interesting, especially if you've already got a place online, especially
exactly.
If you're a business and it looks really nice. You've got pricing tiers. It all makes a lot of sense. So yeah, tintup.com. Very cool.
Yeah, kind of fun. And then this story is not so much fun, Sarah. For people who are wondering what happens to all of their different social media channels, and I think we've talked about this a few times on the show before, Google has just addressed this issue, and they have come up with a suite of services, and they put a blog post on their site called Plan Your Digital Afterlife with Inactive Account Manager. Now, if it were April 1st, I might have thought this was an April Fool's joke because of the name, Inactive Account Manager. Mm-hmm. But it is the real thing. So basically, within the Google account settings page, you'll be able to tell Google what you want done with things like your Gmail messages and any other accounts you have with them, and the duration of time if they find out that you're inactive for a certain amount of time. What happens with all that information? Who gets notified? Or maybe it just all completely disappears. So it's something people are going to have to think more and more about, especially as they spend more time through these different channels.
I think that a lot of this is it's needed. And this Google public policy blog post starts out by saying none of us really want to think about death. However, you know, this is the kind of stuff where if you want your affairs in order, it just more than ever seems like this is kind of necessary, because otherwise you get into some gray areas where, well, what if no one has any access to your account? Who do they get a hold of to maybe be able to obtain pictures or, you know, private things? Or if someone does have access to your account, is that person authorized? It's almost like saying in a will, yes, this person has been deeded, you know, these particular objects. What about your digital presence and all of the things that actually should either go away or should be put into the trusted hands of someone else? I think this is, it's a kind of a morbid subject, but it seems like Google's doing the right thing by saying, here are some of the tools that you're just going to need to think about. You know, this doesn't have to be gimmicky or cutesy or like, ooh, you know, kind of a thing. It's just something that you should think about.
Yeah, exactly. Especially if you amass so much personal information and photos and whatever else might be there, it's important to think about the future of that. So I guess Google is being very responsible, even if it has sort of a quirky name to the service.
For sure. I still don't know if I really ever want anyone to have my Gmail account. There's nothing, it's not that there's anything super juicy in there. It's just, there's so much, you know, it's kind of like, you might just need to die with me.
Yeah, it's like you should have a button if you're getting close to death that you can just press and it self-destructs all of those things, right?
And then
just
and
explodes
then
your Twitter account.
And you walk into the light with a clean, clear conscience.
Clean state,
it's all
slate,
gone,
exactly.
You know, and now you can finally let go. Oh, Amber. Yeah, we seem a little too like happy-go-lucky about this whole thing.
Yeah,
maybe because we both feel so healthy right now. Everybody wants wood.
That could be the okay. problem.
All right, so let's get into a couple of our neat feedback solutions from Mike Tabbert. Hello, Mike. You're always giving us great little things to talk about. So thank you for that. He on Twitter pointed us to an article on Read Write about social media and taxes. Now, you know, I've got about, what, 3 more days now to file my taxes here in the U.S., but taxes differ by country, of course, but I think that this applies to many of us. And the idea is that because of what, you know, is now known as big data, basically algorithms that crunch huge, huge amounts of data from all over the internet, from millions and millions, millions of people, organizations like the IRS in the U.S. can pay more attention to what we've actually been doing and be able to pinpoint areas that have discrepancies. So if I were to file a tax return and claim that, you know, I bought a certain really, really big ticket item on this day and somehow on Facebook it shows that, you know, I was on vacation, or there's some sort of like a, that doesn't sound quite right, that could red flag me all that much more because, you know, the IRS is sort of in the business of making sure that I'm paying everything that I need to be paying. Amber, I part of this, you know, I sort of go like, well, you know, if you don't lie, then you don't have to worry about it. But there are also honest mistakes that happen all the time. You know, some of, you know, itemization of tax stuff can get really complicated. And I wonder how much this will end up flagging people who aren't necessarily trying to fool anybody because there simply is so much information out there.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think this is pretty frightening and maybe just a wake-up call for people who are using some of these social sites and sharing a lot. And Sarah, it reminds me, do you remember that service called Blippi? Is that still around?
No, no.
Where Blippi, you would buy something and
Blippi
it's not,
shut
right?
down a couple of years ago. I think it was, I don't think it was because it was more just lack of user base.
Yeah, exactly. But just the concept of, you know, sharing too much online in terms of even what you may have gone to buy. But yeah, I think that's a little bit scary for people. Even like you said, even people who aren't running into any problems with their taxes don't do anything wrong. But just knowing that your information is being looked at and could be taken the wrong way, I think is a frightening reality of our times, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, if you think the IRS is already looking at activity on places like eBay, you know, are they going to, you know, be looking that much more closely at credit card transactions and other online payments? I mean, so much of that, you know, has all been taken to the cloud anyway. And yeah, it's just, I think it's the way of the future and we're just going to have to learn how to, you know, navigate. This is a great example of, you know, if there was some sort of, Facebook photos is probably not where I'm going to be hiding secret messages, but if there was some way for the IRS to make sure that I wasn't keeping more money than I had to, they'd look anywhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a little frightening, but that's kind of how big data works.
Oh yeah.
For better, for worse.
And another story, Sarah, that won't go away, and this is from Amir, and he has sent us a tweet saying, this is an article from The Next Web that says, The Next Web doesn't buy retweets, never has, never will, and saying this would be a good topic of conversation. So based on this article on The Next Web, the New York Times wrote a story titled Fake Twitter Followers Become Multi-Million Dollar Business. We've talked about this subject on the show a lot. Mm-hmm. Buying Twitter followers, knowing that a lot of people out there continue to do it. It's not necessarily a good idea. And also talking about how people are potentially buying retweets. And based on this article, it looks like The Next Web was accused of possibly doing this. And in the post, they just explain the reason they do have so many retweets from other individuals and how they have a clear conscience when it comes to their pure Twitter following, or as pure as it can get, I suppose.
Yeah, this is a very interesting story. And The Next Web is obviously on the defensive because the Next Web is not the kind of publication who wants to be associated with basically fake accounts who are who are spamming, you know, the Twitterverse. But they do mention that they have a tool that they had built called Spread.us. Spread Us, I guess. It's a terrible name. They said that they built it in February of 2012. It's sort of an internal incubator program where they built certain tools. And the idea is that it would allow someone like me to automatically share a tweet that the next web shares. So if for some reason, let's say I really thought that the next web was an amazing source for Microsoft news, I could set up this service to basically auto retweet anytime there was a Microsoft story that was shared from the next web account. Now, that's not necessarily, I mean, that's not really an organic way of using Twitter, because I might not have necessarily even read that article. But let's say, for whatever reason, I'm just confident that it's going to be something that I want to pass along to my people. Maybe Microsoft is my beat. Maybe that, you know, maybe it just makes sense for me. That can generate a lot of retweets in a very short amount of time, which it sounds like. I mean, the next web is basically saying, that's where a lot of this was coming from, and that's why we got singled out as a company that's like, too many retweets, something's going on here. And they said, well, there was something going on, but it certainly wasn't us, you know, paying to get retweeted from fake / spam accounts. So it's unfortunate when you're called out that way, because it makes it look like you're trying to, you know, fool everybody.
Yeah, and I guess this has kind of had the snowball effect. So there have been other publications who have written the same thing about the next web, and it just keeps evolving, evolving. And even though there is no real proof in terms of them doing this, so just an unfortunate situation. And it's a very hard thing to prove that you don't do that, right? I mean, you can stand there and say that you don't do it, but it's a very difficult thing to prove for anyone, whether you do it or not. So, you know, it's never a good idea to do it anyway, but I do feel a little bit of their pain, and it's unfortunate that they got into the middle of this, if in fact what they're saying is true.
Right, right. And that kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. It's like the next web is, and by the way, I have no reason to believe that what they're saying isn't completely true. It sounds like they were just kind of unfairly attacked in this sense. But if the next web did, you know, for some reason want to make it seem like every time we send out a link, we get twice as many retweets as the next tech publication because maybe someone was interested in acquiring them. You know, there are all sorts of reasons where either individuals or businesses could benefit from something like this. And like you said, Amber, it can be really hard to know who's actually paid to boost their numbers, because anybody who's got over, I mean, several hundred followers are going to start having these weird accounts that aren't really legitimate anyway. There's just a lot of that going on Twitter. I mean, I know.
Yeah, you can't get rid of it.
You can't. There's a huge number of my followers that just, they're not active. They're not, it doesn't go anywhere. They don't have profile pictures. They don't interact with me. They probably have no idea who I am. And it doesn't, it's just fluff. And it's up to Twitter to go in and comb that stuff out, because I can't police that myself.
No, it's too much, right?
Yeah.
Now, we also have an email from Art that says, "Hi, Sarah and Amber. Have you heard of hourlynerd.com? It could be useful to small businesses needing someone with an MBA to help them." And I have to say, I love the name.
Hourly Nerd. Yeah, hourlynerd.com. Thanks, Art. I am not familiar with Hourly Nerd. They say that they've been seen on a few of these shows. When I click on those links, it doesn't actually go anywhere. But the idea, as I understand it, is that this was created by a group of NBA students to basically give companies or individuals or freelancers or whatever some access to somebody that has specialized skills that you may not have if you didn't go to business school, basically. I did not. So, for example, there are some past projects that I can look through at Hourly Nerd, which is kind of interesting, where a MBA student who went to Kellogg charged a company, a cupcake store company, some help in rebranding their website. Okay, well, you might say, like, well, you really need an MBA for that type of a thing. There's another a project that Boston-based florists sought a manager for some website redesign, and upgrade from a display-based page to a full e-commerce platform. Again, trying to monetize a little bit more. Industry analysis, scaling using debt or equity. You know, stuff that maybe you just figure, I need to hire an NBA holder for a few hours, you know, or for maybe like a couple of weeks. I mean, a lot of recent NBA grads have some time on their hands. You know, the job market isn't where it should be in general, and that applies to even people who have really great credentials. So I kind of like the idea of matching up people who have particular skills. You know, Amber, this reminds me of. Of course, now I'm going to forget what the site is called. I'll have to look back. Maybe somebody in chat can remember. It was the idea that, you know, if I wanted to take, let's say, French lessons, I could match myself up with somebody who had a degree in French, you know, or was a skilled French teacher who had, you know, maybe 10 spare hours per week, and we could be matched up. Sounds like the kind of the same thing, except that Hourly Nerd is really more focused on business and economics.
Yeah, I was thinking at first of Fancy Hands, which I know is a little bit different, but still the idea that you are getting help from people who are looking for work and they're kind of one-off jobs. But there it seems like there this is a growing category of different services out there as people try to create a job for themselves if perhaps they don't have one. So I love the name, and hopefully they'll do well. And Sarah, before we wrap up this section of the show, I have to tell you, we are not going to play Gangnam Style. Don't worry.
I'm glad. Yes,
that's for you, because I know you probably couldn't hear that again. You might just hang up on me. But we are going to talk about Psy, and this is for our social media marketing campaign of the week. We see this all the time where someone who's had a lot of success online from YouTube or wherever becomes part of a campaign. And this one is no different. There is a food brand from South Korea that has basically hired Psy, and they're doing a contest where they're looking for Psy's next cooking chef. So someone who's going to cook for him and having some fun with that. It's a Facebook campaign, and there are a bunch of different elements to it. $40,000 prize. I believe that is actually monthly, but I could be wrong about that. I'll just double check. And, you know, kind of having fun with his YouTube fame. So looks like Psy, even if he doesn't have another hit, at least he could have a chef.
Yeah. There's a friend of mine who's actually, she's Korean, and she's spent quite a bit of time in Korea and has a startup that was really geared towards the Korean community, even though she lives in San Francisco. I asked her about Psy, and I said, what's the deal? You know, is the whole kind of like Gangnam Style thing just some weird meme thing that happened in other parts of the world or what? And she said, you know, this guy has been on kind of the celebrity talk circuit in Korea for quite a while. He's already well known as kind of, you know, this, he's a real character and this sort of a thing. So it's almost like this just seems like the next, it's almost like his music video was a really big hit, but that was just one of the many things that Psy is known for. So you got to give it to him. He seems like a pretty happy guy. I mean, I'm pretty sick of Gangnam Style. Don't particularly want to hear that on Pringles commercials or pistachio commercials or whatever it is they're using that song for now. But yeah, I applaud him. He's taken his internet fame and it seems to be transforming into other things. And, you know, long live Psy on the internet.
Why not? Yeah, good for him, right? You know, he's created this amazing brand for himself. And I think the contest really lends to his quirkiness, because even in the write-up, they say that the person who's hired as the personal chef doesn't even need to know how to cook. So clearly there are some wacky elements to this particular campaign, and it's just kicking off, and should be kind of fun to watch at least some of the submissions do it.
Absolutely. All right. Really quickly, before we get into our Rad or Fad segment, and you know what that means, it's the best part of the show, we want to remind you how you can get a hold of us. TheSocialHour@twit.tv is how you can email us. You can leave us a voicemail, 2626-SOCIAL. That's 2626-SOCIAL. That's our Google Voice inbox. So Amber and I aren't going to answer, but we will listen to your message and we'll play it in a future show. You can also record a video somewhere, upload it, send us the link, or tweet at us at Sarah Lane or at Amber Mack on Twitter. And you know how to get a hold of us. podcast. We're on Facebook. We're on Google Plus. We try to be as all over the place as we can. Quickly, before we do get into Rad or Fad, though, we want to thank Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Squarespace, of course, I was talking earlier in the show that I don't do all that much writing anymore these days, but I really want to get back into it. And when I do, I'm going to relaunch my new Squarespace blog. I think I'm going to use it as a Squarespace blog, but Squarespace is a lot more than just a blogging platform. I mean, it's pretty much the fastest way to create a professional website, a portfolio, an online store. You know, I've really gotten into photography and I want to start selling some of my stuff or some of my knitting creations pretty much anything you could think of. Squarespace Commerce provides a powerful and flexible e-commerce solution, which is very nice, especially for those of us, just dabbling, getting our toes wet, integrated to work with every Squarespace template. Now, that is cool. So it's not like there are a lot of these Squarespace templates that work really well and look awesome, even via mobile. But if you want to use the e-commerce function, you've only got a few templates to choose from. Now, you can do it with all of them. And they're allowing sales for both physical and digital goods. So, you know, you could sell your music CDs, or you could sell hardcover books, or you could sell ebooks. Fast merchant account setup, so you can accept payments right away with credit or debit cards. And for order management, you can track orders. You can provide customer email updates, print shipping labels, add coupons. So this is really, really professional stuff. Squarespace Commerce is included with a business plan subscription. That starts at $24 per month when you sign up for a year, or it's $30 for a monthly plan. So you've definitely got some flexibility there as well. Squarespace gives you and your website a great mobile experience as well. If you are selling stuff on your Squarespace site, you know full well that a lot of people are just going to be accessing it via mobile more and more. It's not going to go down. It's only going to go up. And that means you've got a mobile-ready store with Squarespace's new commerce solution. Of course, you've got that social media integration. We talk about that all the time. You know, I don't write that much, but my current Squarespace site is being updated all the time because I'm bringing in stuff that I'm writing on Twitter and that I'm updating on Google Plus and that I'm uploading to Flickr, all that stuff. So, if you're interested, here's what you do. A free trial at squarespace.com. You just sign up for a free account, and you don't need a credit card to do that. You can just try it out and start building your website from scratch. If you do decide to purchase a plan, use the offer code SOCIALHOUR4. So that's SOCIALHOUR and the number 4, which is all one word, and you get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, which is monthly and annual plans. They also have free domain registration. If what I said wasn't enough, Squarespace actually has free domain registrations, too, for annual plan subscriptions. Again, squarespace.com. Start that free trial. You can use the offer code SOCIALHOUR4 for that 10% off. And thanks to Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. All right, Amber, for this Rad or Fad, we're back into wearable tech.
It's all about wearable tech, Sarah. That's what I've been noticing for our Rad or Fads, because it seems like every time I turn around, a company has developed something new in the wearable tech category. And it's not always the big companies out there. Sometimes there are smaller organizations or groups of people. This one is right up that alley as far as being a Kickstarter project. That's how it began. And the product is called Link Me. And the idea being that this is a bracelet that you would wear, of course, and there's an app component that goes along with it, and essentially it will allow you to get messages on your wrist, on the actual bracelet, like text messages, Twitter messages. You can program kind of what messages come through in terms of what messages you'll see there. It's going to retail for about $150 and be available in August. And, doesn't go quite as far as some of the smartwatches that we've seen out there, but instead it's all about messaging, which we know is all the craze, especially with the younger generation. And it could be kind of interesting. What do you think?
You know, okay, so it would be easy for me to just say, you know what, Amber, I'm sick of all this wearable tech.
Yeah.
The thing is that so much of this is just, we're still just talking about it. It's not as if we're wearing everything. So much of this is like conceptually, how do we feel about it? Because it's unproven.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe, at least for me, I can't have something that I'm wearing that's, you know, buzzing at me every few seconds. I mean, much like most of my notifications on my phone are turned off, I have certain things that are pushed to you know, wake my phone, or if somebody favorites my tweet that I follow, that sort of a thing. There are certain things. But in general, I find something that I'm wearing, because I'm not really ever wearing my phone, it would just be that much more invasive. But if it was something very specific, you know, if it was messages based only, then maybe I might like it a little bit more, especially if it was kind of a cool looking bracelet. And I thought that Link Me bracelet looked kind of cool.
It is kind of cool. I have to agree with you on the design. And that's been my issue with smartwatches forever now, is that the designs are, generally speaking, very masculine and not something that I would wear. But I do think that this is kind of a cool looking bracelet. If they had it looking really interesting and there were options as far as different colors and textures, and it was something that you may wear as an accessory, but it also had this additional functionality, that's where I'm kind of interested. And also being able to simply get messages from, you know, one specific person maybe, or a very small group of people, because I don't know about you, Sarah, but in my life, you know, maybe there's four or five people that I need to communicate, and those are usually important messages, and it would be nice just to have those messages as part of that. But I think they have to be careful with the design, because how big do you want those messages to come up on your wrist in front of everybody at a meeting? It could be awkward.
Yeah, it could be awkward. Absolutely, for sure. I'm going to go ahead and say that I think this is rad. I kind of like the look of it. I kind of like that it's sort of specific. I think that I'm going to give it a try. For $150, if it works well and becomes something that I enjoy rather than something that I'm like, ugh, this is such a burden, I hate looking at this, then I feel like it might be worth it. There is sort of like that LED thing that tends to make them all look the same. I mean, to me, that looks like a Nike Fuel Band right now. Yeah. But maybe there are, you know, different designs, and sort of like the Pebble Watch, where you can have different displays based on the, you know, the skin that you download.
And I think being able to manipulate how it comes up, right? I'm not a big fan of it kind of scrolling across the screen. Maybe you can, if you were able to change things like the font size, if you could go into an invisible mode, so maybe people couldn't see it, or whatever it might be. But I think we're still in really early days of wearable tech. So I do think it's kind of rad, but unfortunately, from a practical standpoint, we're kind of at the beginning of the fad stage too, because there's nothing that I'm just jumping on and saying, hey, this is a cool thing, I'm going to wear this every day.
Yeah, I know. There's
not yet.
There's too much of it. We've got to have all these products come out in the next, what, year? I assume we're going to have a lot more wearable tech options than we do right now. And then it's going to become obvious. What do people really want to wear? I mean, I wore that Nike Fuel Band for a good, I don't know, Amber, about 6 months.
Oh, wow.
And I got pretty used to it. But, I mean, it wasn't, like, good looking. It didn't match anything else. You know, if I wanted to wear, like, silver jewelry, it was going to look really weird next to it. And that was, you know, some people don't care about that at all. I didn't care about it most of the time, but every once in a while I did. And so that's something that's got to be factored in, too. I mean, does it become something that's fatigue because you just stop caring? You know, are all these gadgets actually going to stand the test of time? My Fuel Band and my Jawbone Up, which was the bracelet I had before the Fuel Band, both bricked on their own through no fault of my own, and I just never got another replacement unit. So it's kind of like, what's the stain factor? Do we maybe have to keep them simple, or do we want wearable tech that does everything? I'm not sure. I don't know what the answer is yet.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is either. I mean, I know that obviously none of this is going away anytime soon, and we're going to see more and more of it around there. But I think there's still so much work to be done. And I think just the aesthetics of it all just need a whole lot of improvement before I see some of these things going mainstream. But, you know, it could be cool. You know, the right person's going to figure it out, and the right company's going to figure it out, and it could be awesome. It could be totally rad, 100%.
It could be totally rad. It's true. We've got the iWatch, maybe, and a variety of other things as well. So I'm excited for our wearable tech future, Amber, and I'm excited to pan a product that isn't good as well.
What about a ring, Sarah, like a smart ring? That would be cool, unless irritating.
Well, you know, that has actually been floated around already in some of the Apple rumors, that there's, you know, possibility that the company is working on some sort of an eye ring, which would, I mean, I don't know. then you're getting a little, I mean, what are you really going to be looking at? Then you'd have to have scrollable words, right? But
yeah,
I
but
don't
then,
know.
You know,
I mean,
you know, you're in a meeting, you don't want to look at your phone. If you had a ring on and all of a sudden things were scrolling around the inner side of it, and you could just kind of read your emails without anyone noticing.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting.
Right. And you have to sort of be like, or you could kind of be like.
You'd have to have fat fingers, though, because I don't think you get too much text on most people's fingers.
I want to see all the ways that people like stealthily are using their wearable technology in meetings. Like,
It's so true.
Yeah, my back hurts through my back. Yeah. You know, kind of thing. All right, Amber. Well, before I embarrass myself anymore by stretching weirdly, we should probably wrap up this episode of The Social Hour. It's been a great hour, jam-packed with good stuff. Hope you guys enjoyed it as much as we did. Reminder that if you want to watch us live and you haven't already, that's really fun. Friday afternoon, you know, grab a beverage and sit down and hang out with us. Amber and I actually we're never really treating this like a traditional social hour, but you can. On Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, of course. Most of us, most of everybody who watches and listens to The Social Hour ends up watching on demand. And that's great, too. twit.tv/TSH is where you can find those subscription links. If you just want to get the show delivered to you every week without even thinking about it, we've got nice handy-dandy subscribe buttons for video and audio feeds as well. So thanks, everybody, for watching and listening. We love you all. All right, Amber, I guess until next week, right around this time, on this set and in your set in Toronto, we'll just keep scraping the web for the best social news, huh?
We will, Sarah. Thanks for watching, everyone, and we'll see you soon.
See ya.